Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. It's 4:30 p.m. Eastern on the 29th of June, 2020. I've been reading an interesting book called Eyewitnesses to the Gods, What I Kept Secret for Decades by Eric Von Doniggen. And I thought I would start the show out this afternoon by reading a section in this book called Egyptian Connections. And this is entitled The Sealed Sarcophagus. In 1951, archaeologist Dr. Zakira Ghanem discovered a wall in the desert sand southwest of the Steppe Pyramid of Saqqara. In the following months of excavation, outlines of a huge enclosure with dimensions of 546 by 185 meters became visible. Finally, Dr. Ghanem came across two steps of the pyramid with a base length of 120 meters. In January 1954, after more than 2 years of excavation, they unearthed a rectangular shaft carved out of the rock leading underground. Dr. Ghanem and his crew worked with pickaxes and shovels and gradually worked through the layers of rock. At a depth of 32 meters, they found a locked door, which had obviously never been breached by grave robbers, for the seal was untouched. Finally, they got the door open and found themselves in an underground room that was 8.9 meters long, 5.2 meters wide, and 4.5 meters high. So you can imagine 4.5 meters, that's about 15 feet high. It's a pretty high room. And they got a picture of it. It's quite interesting here with three fellows standing in it. One of those is Eric Von Doniggen. By studying the inscriptions and the potteries, they discovered to whom the grave belonged. It was an Egyptian man named Dosoreti, who had ruled under the name, who had ruled under the Horus name Sekhemet during the Third Dynasty. This was around 2700 BC or 4700 years ago. And if we use the present time as a point of reference, and so Sekhemet was older than Cheops of the Great Pyramid. Sekhemet's actual burial room, had been carved out of the rock and left that way. It had no published monoliths, no paintings on the walls, but it did have 21 armlets on the floor, 388 golden beads, 428 faience ornaments, and a gilded staff. At the center of the cave was the magnificent sarcophagus made of white alabaster, a type of marble. The sarcophagus was entirely carved out of a single alabaster rock. On top of it lay the millennia-old remains of a flower arrangement, which someone must have put there as the last tribute to the deceased pharaoh. So they go on here, and then they talk about the fact that it could perhaps date as far back as 10,000 BC. And they talk about these heavy lids that these sarcophagus typically have. This was one of the oldest sarcophagus they ever found in Egypt. Now, and it took a long time for them to get it open. They finally got the thing open. And here's what they said when they looked inside of it. They said, The magnificent alabaster chest turned out to be sparkling clean and empty, an impossibility. Then they say there were no grave, there were no burglars, there was no broken seals. So the question was, why was it empty? And then there's another section entitled, Where Did They Vanish To? And where are the corpses of the gods? Diodorus knows what is told about the burial of these gods is contradictory, mainly because the priests were forbidden to pass on the exact knowledge of these things communicated to them. That's why they were not allowed to tell the people the truth, because of the danger that the covert wisdom about the gods would bring to the masses. Diodorus had written about the funeral of the gods, and everything about these funerals had to be kept secret. When I stood in the ancient hall of rocks older than the Cheops pyramid, the contradictions hit me like the restrained giggling of the gods. The strength and simultaneous delicacy of Sekhemet's alabaster sarcophagus did not this hole in the rock. Did I stand in front of one of the sleeping gods, of one of the legendary gods? Had an offspring of a god slept here, maybe not for an eternity, but only for a few decades or centuries until his space traveling colleagues picked him up and resurrected him? Does it sound absurd? Question mark. I thought that was a kind of an interesting thing here to pass on. This is a very good book, Eyewitness to the Gods, What I Kept Secret for Decades, Eric Von Doniggin. It's a very quick read, too, which is, of course, a bit of a contrast to a lot of the Meyer writings. Now, I want to, and I'm sorry I'm reading so much, I want to do to read something from the Talmud of Emmanuel. And this was chapter 21, and it's called Two Blind Persons. And when they set out on their way to Jericho, many people followed him. And behold, two blind persons sat by the wayside. And when they heard Emmanuel going by, they cried out, saying, O Lord, you son of the celestial sun, have mercy on us. But the people threatened them to be quiet, but they screamed even louder, saying, O Lord, you Son of God, have mercy on us. And Emmanuel stood and called out to them, saying, I know that I am not a son of your false God. But tell me, what do you want me to do for you? They said to him, Lord, open our eyes so we can glimpse the splendor of the world. And he had pity on them and said, whose power do you suppose it is that is supposed to make you see? And they, however, replied, the power of our God, which is in his might. So touch our eyes and then we will see. And Emmanuel was astonished and said, truly, you are in the belief of your God, and now such belief is found among this people everywhere. And until now, such belief is found among this people everywhere. Therefore, it should happen to you as you believe. Then may your God help you, and may you see. And he touched their eyes, but they did not see because their belief was not truthful enough and was at all times wrong. So Emmanuel and his like-minded companions went further along their way, and he taught everyone in open words, saying, truly, truly, I say to you, if you do not know according to true knowledge, do not have complete certainty, just as the two men who are in a weak belief do not, then what you want will not succeed for you. But if you know in true knowledge, if you have certainty, and you understand, and you are given to the wisdom, then everything will be for you in such a wise as you want it. Wow, there's the power of your thoughts. And what does Billy say? What I mightfully think manifests for me. What I mightfully think manifests for me. And there's another passage that says, in every regard, the human must trust himself and in his or her might and power. Let me continue here. But if you know in true knowledge, if you have certainty and you understand and you are given to the wisdom, then everything will be for you in such a wise as you want it. And if you practice true love and knowledge and truth and do not doubt, not only will you do good things, but if you say to a fig tree that it should dry up, then it will dry up. And remember a show or two ago, or maybe it was last show, we were talking about how thoughts can negatively or positively affect another person's life force to the point where you can be guilty of a murder. Let me continue here. That it should dry up, then it will dry up. We're talking about the fig tree. Or if you would say to a mountain that it is to lift itself up and throw itself into the sea, then it will come to pass. In this case, if you do not doubt, it cannot be said these words speak of the faith, belief, or that doubts are condemned in the Talmud of Emmanuel. It is expressly stated in other words, if you are knowing and understand and follow the wisdom, if you practice love and truth and do not doubt, this is not at all the talk of faith, belief, or of having to believe out of effective knowledge that rises from the reality. And if a human being is bearing the effective reality and the knowledge, then he or she has no doubts, but rather in a stronghold in understanding and rationality and a certainty built on true love. What was the other thing we were looking at the other day? The doubt as a shortcoming. Anxiety and doubt destroy all knowledge. It's just so interesting, the consistency in this information. And then two different books. It's just amazing. This is meant by do not doubt. Therefore, it does not concern a doubt or a doubting attitude. Rather, it effectively concerns if you have a certainty. So I think part of the might of the thoughts is truly having certainty, being absolutely certain. Kind of a scary thing, actually, the power of these thoughts, our thoughts. Now, concerning the fig tree that dries up and the mountain that throws itself into the sea, this is only a parable, which means that the human being who lives in certainty in his or her knowledge and his or her love and in his or her wisdom and thus has no doubts therein can always achieve all that which he or she is able to accomplish with his or her own powers, no doubts. Doubt as a shortcoming. There's a whole section dedicated to that. I'm not going to pull it up. It's tempting, but I'm not going to do it. It's going to take too long. And if you know, in truth and wisdom, your spirit consciousness will be mighty. And if you know and live in the truth of the wisdom of the reality, the certainty, then your spirit consciousness is filled with unending power. Then everything that you yourself command or that you wish for in edification or in prayer from you yourself, you will receive if you trust in it, in the reality and certainty. Do not suppose, however, that a prayer is necessary, because you will also receive without prayer if your spirit consciousness is taught / trained through the knowledge and the wisdom and the reality, certainty. explanation. Edification corresponds to a conscious uplifting of one's own thoughts and feelings, and thereby become directed towards calmness, peace, freedom, love, and harmony, as well as towards firmness, whereby security, energy, and power originate. But which one strives for the desired things with a great certainty, through which the desired things become achievable and fulfilled by one's own initiative, power, and actions? This is particularly with regard to one's own moral and physical, psychical, as well as consciousness-based state. This means that through the edifying of one's own powers and one's own abilities, all desired things and wishes which are possible to be realized become fulfilled, because there is the necessary security, power, and the certainty that everything wished for can be achieved and can also come true. But this is contingent on one's own pertinent actions. At the same time, only those things and wishes which are purely illusionary and thus beyond any possibility of realization are excluded. This area that I'm reading right now is so dense. It's so intense and dense in the material. It sounds much like the Might of Thoughts book. Concerning the prayer, which is to be understood fundamentally as a certain form of give me or grant me, regarding the things and wishes that are to be fulfilled, this is also directed to one's own thoughts and feelings. Due to completely wrong discourses and traditions and so on, however, the prayer is erroneously declared in occultic form as I beg. Wow, this is so true. When you're saying things out loud to your consciousness, like I am confident, I am optimistic, I am relaxed, I am cheerful, I'm the master of my own destiny, the forger of my own fortune, the creator of my own good luck. I don't allow my thoughts to drift on the ocean of life. I steer my thoughts like a captain steers his ship. But you know, there's no begging in there. You're not begging a deity for help. There's no anxiety. Really, if you're begging, that means you kind of have anxiety and doubt, which wipe out all knowledge anyway. But this is fundamentally wrong, because the prayer, Gebet, in German arises from the term Gebet, or give, in German. In which case, that which has to be fulfilled is not beggingly, but rather conscientiously determined. The prayer is far from any kind of begging, an occultic, that is a religious or sectarian form. A prayer has the same effect as the edification. So also a conscious uplifting is given, and at the same time a pure request to oneself, that is to one's own thoughts and feelings, for the wish. The wish is to be met. So a prayer is geben in the German, which means to give. Very different. It's almost like close to a command, maybe? I don't know. That is to one's own thoughts and feelings. Consequently, one's powerful certainty and one's own corresponding actions must also be given in this respect, so that the prayer will be filled. And we're always talking about certainty, being certain of something. Totally different. Most people are begging in their prayers, which is a really wrong thinking anyway. You shouldn't be in that kind of emotional. That's a very negative emotion that really, if a person is begging, it kind of indicates that they don't trust in their own power at all. That it's really bad. Not the right way to think. As with the edification, the prayer concerns a suggestive self-influencing with regard to one's own thoughts. So you're influencing yourself by saying, I am confident, I am optimistic, I am relaxed, I am cheerful. As well as the necessary motivation whereby the specific thing that is consciously sought after through the prayer comes to fulfillment. But at the same time, one's own actions are also necessary for this purpose. Edification and prayer, in the manner mentioned, have no religious or sectarian or belief-based hint about them whatsoever, as they are purely suggestively formed and thus fall into a conscious self-determination, from which all that is necessary is consciously done in an action-based as well as thought-based and feeling-based manner, such that the requirements and the wishes become fulfilled. This means, therefore, that the human being who holds the edification or involves him or herself in prayer does the determining by him or herself, and thus also determines whether or not his or her wishes come true. Even whether or not he or she takes the necessary steps in relation to his or her own motivation, own will, own initiative, and own actions. If he or she actually does this conscientiously and with certainty, then everything will be fulfilled. Then he or she will also have success and will see his or her wishes come true. In contrast to the aforementioned forms of this edification and the prayer, there are the religious and sectarian related edifications, devotions and prayers stemming from faith, belief, which exhibit forms like petitionary prayers, intercessory prayers, penitential prayers, prayers, quick prayers, prayers of praise, prayers of indulgence, prayers of exaltation, prayers of incantation, etc. All of these confused prayers are, without exception, directed toward a cultic, religious, or sectarian faith belief and are based on anxiety and submissiveness. Bingo. Your prayers should not be based on anxiety. Anxiety and doubt destroy all knowledge. I wish I had that in front of me. Hopefully I quoted that correctly. As well as on the unfulfillable hopes that a God, angel, Jesus Christ, or a so-called saint or some Godhead or ten God will hear the prayers and fulfill the submissively requested wishes. The whole thing is illusory and ineffective, of course, except in cases where the ones praying strive for fulfillment of their prayers, by which a fulfillment can come about, a further fulfillment of the prayer-based wishes that are requested through prayer, result from the normal course of life, history, situation, etc., whereby causal foreordinations arise quite naturally and in practically necessary manner. This is also known as inevitably, by which the submissive prayers that are subject to questioning faith supposedly become fulfilled. But in truth, it simply concerns the normal course of things and of existence. Consequently, no faith-based prayers request or cries for help to a God or angel, saint, etc. are heard or fulfilled by them. In truth, it is solely the causal foreordinations that arise from the course of relative events and situations, etc., which then become erroneously and confusedly interpreted and misunderstood by the believers of the cult religions, sects as their prayers, and faith becoming heard. Well, this is, again, chapter 21 of the Talmud of Emmanuel, starting at page 330. This is some of the most profound stuff I've heard in a long time. And it coincides right along with the Might of Thoughts information, which is really kind of interesting. It's like there are certain concepts that keep manifesting themselves. The importance of the Might of Thoughts and the importance to get rid of anxiety and doubt. I'll continue. Do not confuse yourself and do not heed the falsified teaching that the human being follows a will that is given by a God, because this belief is based on confusion. Know this, whatever the human being may wish to accomplish, he or she must always first create a will for this or that, because this is the law of nature. And that looks like something worth highlighting to me. And maybe we'll read that again. Whatever, know this, whatever the human being may wish to accomplish, he or she must always first create a will for this or that, because this is the law of nature. So you've got to build up your will, like this is something I want to accomplish. Thus, the human being determines the entire course of his or her life and all things, which is known unavoidably as destiny. Thus, it is given that one acquires knowledge and grasps, learns the truth in order to create from it a will that follows the laws of creation, effective love, which is a brotherly love, striving, the law of harmony. So you have neutral, positive thinking, harmony in the consciousness, system and order, do things at a regular time and a regular interval, a reincarnation, your spirit form is going to reincarnate again in a different material consciousness, the laws according to population, which on our planet should be about 550 million to a billion, something like that. Consider yourselves as human beings who live to grasp, learn, so that the spirit, the consciousness, may become nearly fulfilled relatively perfectly. You were born for the sake of the duty of coming close to the fulfillment of reaching absolutely full development in the spirit consciousness. We're about out of time. Do not concern yourself, therefore, with the time that is coming when the confused teaching will spread that the human being must once again fulfill relatively perfect him or herself in the spirit and the human being because he or she has fallen away from creation. I kind of mumbled through that. I shouldn't have. Very good chapter 21 in the Talmud of Emmanuel. I totally recommend this chapter. It looks like a chapter that you could study for a long, long time to get all that clear. So anyway, thanks for listening. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll talk later. Bye-bye.